Bree and Lucas built their tiny house on a 7.8 metre protruding Wilgard trailer. In this interview, we get to hear about their process around planning, on all of the things that they took into account between themselves and all of the priority lists that they made in order to make a tiny house that was going to be satisfying for them both to live in, including the compromises and really getting drilling down onto why they were making their tiny house and how that reflects in their design. They share with us about their budget and how it changed over time. And importantly, they share with us their process with using the wood polonia, which they've used as internal and external cladding on their tiny house. And they go through what's essentially ends up being a cautionary tale on how to use it successfully. It's an expensive wood, it's extremely low density, so that it's really, really lightweight and great for tiny house building. But if you're thinking about using it for your personal tiny house, it's a really good idea to listen to their journey first so that you can have an easier time of installing polonia. All right, let's get straight to this interview. It's a short interview. Most of our conversation ended up being around the tour of their new tiny house. So to see that tiny house tour, pop over to Fred's Tiny Houses YouTube channel to see Bree and Lucas's house. And this is the part of the conversation in that interview that you didn't get to hear.
Hi, Bree and Lucas. Thanks so much for joining me and doing an interview with me. I'm so excited because you've just moved into your tiny house.
Thank you.
We're excited to be with you.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about the timeline that you've worked with in between picking up the trailer and building and finally completing it?
Yeah, sure. We picked up the trailer about 2 years, like Easter 2 years ago, and picked it up from you guys, and then basically started building on it the holidays after, then had 2 weeks of full-on building it. We basically got all the wall structure up, the roof on and all of that, and the bracing ply. And then from there had only been able to work over the weekends. And then we moved in this past Easter, so a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, the first like 10 weeks, once we had our frame, because we had the trailer and the frame, we spent that time essentially just collecting everything we thought we would need to get up to lock up, or what we thought we would get to lock up at that point. We didn't get to lock up for like another 18 months. But anyways, that's another story.
Yeah.
That was really worthwhile because it meant for those 2 weeks we were just able to work really intensely. I had school holidays, Lucas had time off, and we actually had just a bit under 2 weeks because we had a friend's wedding to go to. It seems to be the story of our lives. Always at another wedding, which is lovely. Yeah, so we stopped, I think, about Thursday in the second week, and we finished by putting the roof on before we went to the wedding.
Yeah, right. So it's a really good assessment, isn't it? For full-time work, only doing it on the weekends, two people. Did you have anybody else helping you out?
Yeah, Bree's dad actually helped us a lot. Yeah. He's basically there always giving some advice and hands-on helping us, which was really nice. And then we had a few friends who's a builder that helped us, and
so we,
a couple of people.
Like, dad was around a fair bit, especially at the beginning. He'd pop up a lot, and there was quite a few days where he would help out. But he's also rebuilding a boat right next to where we've been building. So, yeah, he's always been there to bounce ideas, but I'd say for the last 12 months or so, he's probably just been more companionship, working away next door while we work here. We did have a couple of mates. We asked them to help us with the cladding. So, yeah, we paid some friends that were builders to help us do that, and that was a worthwhile investment for us at that point. We actually had to put the external cladding up and then take the external cladding down.
It's just a dry
and
rehearsal.
Reclaim it and then put it up again because of water problems. But anyways, better before we finished doing the inside. So that put us back probably 6 months. And
oh, that would have just been so dispiriting.
It was.
Yeah. So basically what we're using a polonial timber, which is a super lightweight timber, and the good thing about it is that it's very light. The bad thing is that it is very good at absorbing water. And so we're having a VJ board, or it's a shiplap, but
it's essentially like a bigger VJ groove. So it's symmetrical.
Yeah. And when we purchased it, the guy that sold us the timber said that we basically just needed to paint the outside of it and just put it up. And so we did that. And then within a week or two, it was really dry when we fitted it all. And then after we fitted it, it just started to rain and was really wet a lot. So all the boards started to buckle and cut and actually start to break on the joint and pull off the wall. So all that expansion from the water just basically made the timber swell and come off.
So, and because it's so lightweight, it literally just, the nail stayed in the spot and the timber pulled through. So it was just like a massive mess.
Yeah. So we had to take everything back down again. We had to, because the nails came out, we had a couple of leak points around the windows where water came in. So we had to reseal all of that again and then sand all the boards back. And then we got a painter to give us some advice of what to do. And he basically said, whatever you do on the outside of the board, you have to do on the inside as well, because otherwise the boards start to cup. So we had to do two paints of coat before we even put the boards up. And we had to paint the tongues and groove with an oil-based paint. So we're not putting a layer on, but it soaks actually into the material, or sealed the boards up and stopped water from getting into them. And then paint the outside once it's all fitted.
Yeah. So yeah, we got actually that information about painting on both sides. I was just up at a timber shop at Mullaney, and that's the person we ended up getting our bench tops from. And that was what he said. He said, "Oh, that's, everyone makes that mistake." What it is, like, timber's living. If you don't do what you do to one side, you have to, like, you have to do that. And then the painter that we spoke to said use an oil-based primer, and then he said that it doesn't matter. And so this is what really confused me, is because everyone, I've always understood if you use oil-based, you have to oil-based top. But he said oil-based primer, water-based on top. It doesn't matter. A primer is a primer, but you have to oil-base if you want it to seal. So, we did that, and it took a very long time because we had to take all of the cladding down and then reclaim them, so completely sand them all back, decide which ones we could keep, which ones we had to throw out, buy new timber, and then go through the whole process of,
prepping
all of that and, painting it all, and then doing, like, hand painting, like, in the hands, like the tongues and grooves, was a lengthy process. So, yeah, and then eventually we got to the point where we could put it back up, and then we painted, top coats, obviously, on the outside. So that would be, I would say, if you're working with Polonial, you really need to follow those steps. It's marketed as essentially being waterproof and being used in boating and stuff. And obviously it must get sealed, which makes it perhaps really waterproof then. But yes, I had thought waterproof would be waterproof. And it definitely wasn't.
Yeah, that is such a massive, journey to go through, like having to deal with all those extra steps to reclaim it. And then you didn't even just buy a whole new set.
It's very expensive. So we kind of had to stick with what we had and just order more of what we needed. And the other thing that we learned, some things that some people said, is, like, we've obviously installed it horizontally, and it kind of makes sense. If you install it vertically, the water just runs off, and it's less likely to collect in the gaps. And then the other thing that you should definitely do if you're working with Polonial timber is, once you've put it all in, you have to gaps between every single joint. And
what does that mean?
Then painting, you can buy a thing that's called, like, gaps, a gap filler, and it's like for painters, and you can get some that's flexy enough that it's designed to be used, like, on weather boards, and, like, there's, like, a specific one that's flexible. So that's what we used, but you just need to, like, run that, and it's kind of like a really paintable silicone. And it essentially just seals the gaps so that water can't get in and collect in those places. And then it also gives you a surface that you can paint. So you kind of get like a seamless paint line, which we also hadn't known or thought to do. I feel like it's probably like a tech sheet that needs to get handed out. I think personally, I would probably not use Polonial exteriorly again. I would use it interior. Like, it's great interior. We haven't had any problems. And it is like incredibly lightweight. It's light, more lightweight than like 4 mil ply. So yeah, it is a great option, but it's, yeah, a lot of work.
Sounds like it. Well, hats off to you guys for sticking with it and staying. You could have tossed it all in the bin and just put up some plywood. So good on you guys for sticking with the plan.
Yeah, it's really good, like, if you want to burn it. So that would, yes, have been an easy solution of getting rid of it.
Yeah. But we had budgeted, like, we did think about throwing it out and go again. I looked at getting, like, pre-primed
cedar boards
and stuff. And I think if you can get pre-primed timber, that's amazing. And you should definitely get pre-primed timber.
Getting a new material wouldn't have fit into our financial weight budget. So yeah, we had to stick with it.
Yeah. Well, you did it hard, guys.
And it was really just because, yeah, I mean, you learn, right? We didn't have the information we needed. But we also didn't know which questions to ask to get the information we needed. So it wasn't until we had gone through that process and gone, well, this is what we need to find out, that we could kind of go about fixing that. So anyways, it's working now.
The house?
No. Yeah. On a spreadsheet, it definitely weighs less than 4.5 tons.
It's great. Fingers crossed.
Well, at least you've got a theoretical assessment, because you were at 7.8 meters.
Yeah.
For a house. Yeah. That seems completely achievable in my mind.
Yeah. We hope so. We definitely have a few things. Like, we tiled our bathroom floor, which is a definite weight splurge. As well as all of the, like, the prep that goes, like, the tiles are heavy, but all the glue and the screed that you need to make falls and stuff, that is not light. Which I didn't think about at all. And then we also went with a hardwood floor downstairs and upstairs, so that's pretty heavy as well.
Well, the good thing about those two things is that at least it lowers the center of gravity.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Make sure the house doesn't fly away because it's too light. So.
Exactly. You don't want to do like really heavy roof, you know, that would be.
Exactly. Tiles on the roof would have been a bad idea.
Yeah.
And did you manage to keep the roof underneath the 4.3 metres?
Yeah, 4.25.
Good on you. You've just ticked so many boxes. It looks great. And do you want to tell us about your wallpaper that you've used?
The wallpaper in the bathroom is from a company called Spoonflower, and it's just a native Australian design, which is why I went for it. We did get our wallpaper installed for us because...
There's not a single straight run of wall where you can put up wallpaper, so we thought... Better not try the first time wallpapering ourselves with something.
Is there anything that you want to reflect on in terms of the process as a couple? Like, you face so many problems, and I just imagine that that would just wear me down if that was me.
It definitely did wear us down at times, like, especially when we had to take all the cladding out up off again and all of that. Yeah, it was definitely hard, and we needed a couple of weekends to recover from that. But overall, it's been a really nice process. Like, I think we definitely learned a lot about each other, our strengths. Bree is really good at organizing, so if you ever want anyone to research anything, you get Bree on the job. And if you want someone to create a schedule and actually stick to it, you ask Bree as well.
But if you want a cool design and something that, you know, and understand how, you know, a cool design could work or something that's just completely out of my technical realm, Lucas is definitely the person to be on that.
Yeah, nice. So it sounds like you've both over the time like learnt to recognize where your strengths lie as individuals, and then you can delegate tasks and be open to one another's expertise in that area.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, and teaching each other about the skills. Like I probably had a lot of experience like with tools, like from my trade background, and I built a house with my dad back home. And I was able to teach Bree a lot about that. And the other way around, Bree taught me a lot about painting and colors and all of that. So that was really good. Yeah.
I think just it's really worth spending time coming up with a good plan.
Mm.
But then there's a point where you need to stop looking at ideas.
Yeah.
So we've been building for 2 years, but we've probably been scheming and planning for about 2 years before that. And once we started building, there were so many people that were like, oh, you should watch this or you should look at that. And we just pretty much have stopped looking at other people's tiny houses for inspiration, like to see them and go, oh, it looks great, and to support them, but not for inspiration, because you just reach a point where you go, well, this is our design and this is what works, and we can't incorporate everything into it, like it's too late in the design process. So yeah, I think there's a point where you just go, okay, we've come up with something we like, we're happy with it, it's never going to do everything, and stop.
Yeah. And you really have to prioritize, think what is important in a living space for myself, and then see how you incorporate. Like for us, Bree really enjoys cooking and preparing food, and that was a huge focus for us, so that's why we probably have a much bigger kitchen than most tiny houses. For me, it was all these gadgets that we built in, that was our compromise. Like I think when we started building the tiny house, we had different approaches to why we wanted to build it. Bree wanted to build it because she enjoyed the idea, I guess.
I just thought it would be a cool project, but I suppose I'm also more inspired by the ability to live more restriction-free life, maybe, like to have the flexibility to do whatever we'd like to do and to live wherever we'd like to live, but also to have a really small footprint and to be really environmentally friendly was probably much more my motivations, where Lucas's were
more like the challenge behind making it work. Probably mine. So,
and the financial factor of not having to have a loan was a real thing for Lucas.
Yeah, we made that all like work with this house and really enjoyed it. So it's probably our recommendation is to kind of work out what you want from it and then build towards it.
We sat down in our planning stages, and we still have those lists somewhere, but wrote like lists of must have, would like to have, would be nice if we had, don't need. Write them separately and then come together and, you know, discuss those. And they were sometimes hard conversations to have because you'd be like, well, this is really important to me. And the other person's like, oh, we don't have space for that.
But we could compromise and make something that might fulfill that and at the same time do something else.
Yeah. So. So I think those discussions led us into our design options, because they said, well, like, for example, even our steps, it's like, well, we need something that enables us to have this kitchen size. And like the movable loft, there was a few times where we were like, oh, it's just too hard. But then we came back to the fact that, no, this is why we want to do this. So we have to find a way to make it work. There is a way to make everything work if you just stick at it long enough and reinvent it enough times. And yeah.
Keep making it simpler.
Keep making it simpler.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good advice. There's so much planning that goes into it. And there's so many circular conversations of, you know, comparing values and comparing solutions and weighing up the pros and the cons of a different design.
Yeah, and I think that definitely it's like any massive project that you undertake, like you come out the other end and you're like, I'm so glad we've done this, because, you know, now we have all these skills and it makes the next project seem much less
daunting.
It's like, yeah, well, we can do, like, I know your role, you know, my, like, we'll just go and do our thing. And yeah, it makes you feel like you can do anything.
Yeah, that's great. Together. Okay, I've got one last question for you. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your budget. What did you think it was going to cost? What did it actually cost? Could you even quantify it because of all this extra stuff that you had to buy to even make it? Like, I just thought we just bought so many tools to even make that happen. I don't even know how much the house really cost us to make.
Yeah. Well, we were really lucky on the tool front because Bree's dad's living here. The only tool that we bought was a finishing gun.
And a router. And a measuring tape and some pencils.
Lots of measuring tapes and lots of pencils.
You guys got off so light.
So we were extremely lucky on that front. Probably our budget, when we originally started talking about it, we were thinking about 60 grand.
Originally we started with 40 grand. I think we need 45. And like, this is like, no way.
That's a different approach to everything. Again, Bree having it nice, me having the challenge. So yeah, but we went through our design and considered what everything would cost, and we got to a figure of about 80 grand.
Yeah, we think roughly. I kept a really good track for a long time, and then I kind of stopped. I think when we started pulling things down, I was just like, oh, I don't even know anymore. But yeah, we have kind of gone back, and we think it's about 80,000.
Yeah.
And that includes our appliances.
All our appliances.
Because we didn't have any.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. So around 80. And you've done just about all the labour, but then you had all of those cabinets made.
And we did, we had a couple guys. Well, we had Lucas's brother and a friend from Germany living with us for quite a long period of time during COVID. So they spent, Tizian spent a fair bit of time up here kind of contributing as part of his contributing rent to living in our house. So rather than paying his rent, he worked up here and helped out. So that was a big help. Other than that, we did pay a builder to do our cladding. So our cladding got put up. Lucas helped with the exterior, but he did the interior himself. Then we paid painters to paint the windows again once we'd finished everything else. But everything else we've painted.
And you said about the wallpaper, you had somebody install that because it was mm-hmm. going to be too much of a nightmare for all the windows.
Yeah, and we got our bench tops made for us. Mm. So they got finished by an amazing guy in Mullaney. His name is
David
Linton, and he's got a gallery up there, and he's just an amazing woodworker. Mm. An amazing person to work with. So he did our bench tops for us.
Good on him. And what about the material that you used for the bench tops? What was that?
It's a camphor laurel timber. So
that's what we've got too.
I think that was our inspiration.
Yeah. Cool. We finished it with a really nice coconut and lime oil that's actually edible as well. So
thanks so much, Bree and Lucas. I'm so impressed at your tenacity. Good.
Yeah, thank you to you guys too for our trailer and for Fred for help. I suppose that was someone else that helped out a lot. Is Fred drew our framing plan for us. So
that was really lucky. We don't do that anymore. So you guys lucked me with that. Well, I just love your house. It's beautiful, and it's so clever the way you've designed all the kitchen and the bathroom, and you've really come up with a lot of things that looks like it really works for you guys. So I'm impressed. I really like it.
Yeah, thank you.
We're loving it.
You can follow Bree and Lucas on Instagram with their handle dream.plan.do.repeat. So that's dream, plan, do, repeat on Instagram. To see the tour of their tiny house, go to Fred's Tiny Houses YouTube channel and look up Bree and Lucas. Candid Tiny House is brought to you by Fred's Tiny Houses and Tiny House University with the course How to Build a Tiny House, the Australian online course. All of the people that we interview in Canada Tiny House have taken this course either in person or online and bought a trailer from Fred's Tiny Houses. The music on the podcast is by Scott Buckley. I'm Shannon Schultz, your host. This episode was recorded on Jarrah Country, and we pay our respects and appreciation to the custodians of the land and the living culture of the Dja Dja Wurrung people. Please share this episode with anybody who you think might enjoy it. Take care and stay candid. Thank you.
Thank you.